Just to update you a little bit, I've divided this session from one session into two. After discussing our experience last summer with talking about the topic and how angry people got when we tried to do it all in one session, discussing it with Don, I decided that it might be a little more fair to try and spread it out. So today, I'm going to try and present some material to you that are basically just some theories or some information that I've picked up and glommed onto here and there about anger, and we'll have a chance to talk about it a little bit. And tomorrow, 10:45, the focus will be on anger, but it will be more on what do you do with it? How do you deal with it? How do you get rid of it? All that kind of things we'll focus on tomorrow. So if we drift off into some of those what do you do with it topics or discussions, I may cut you off and ask you to hold it till tomorrow. Okay, a couple things as, introduction. I'm a Lutheran minister and a marriage and family counselor and a chemical dependency counselor, and I'm from Minnesota and I'm Swedish. So my experience with anger was that once when I was about 4, I got angry. Since then, I found out that Swedes and Norwegians can't be angry, and especially if you're Christians, it's not all right. So I thought it would be a good thing to talk about. A couple other things I think are kind of important to start out with are that I don't want to give anybody the impression that it's not okay to be angry, that you shouldn't be angry, that you're supposed to feel something different than the emotion of anger. I think we need to recognize the fact that anger is an emotion that people feel, that everybody feels, and people deal with it in different ways. So basically, I think foundationally, anger is there, everybody has it, and everybody deals with it in different ways. The other thing is that I think in general, like emotions, they're neither good or bad. There's been a lot of moralizing about emotions in the past, that there are good emotions and there are bad emotions. There are emotions that are okay to have and there are those that aren't okay to have. Well, I basically believe that's a lot of false moralizing, that emotions are simply emotions, they're neither good or bad, they just are. They're kind of like self-esteem, they're kind of like the color of your eyes. They're there, and it's neither good or bad that your eyes are blue or green or brown or whatever. Okay, I want to start out a little bit in talking about anger by discussing it, first of all, a little bit with the terms we use. I think the words that we use for anger are very interesting, and I understand them best. I'm a real visual kind of person, so I understand them by putting them on a continuum. And I think the words run the gamut from cool to very, very high. And I think that's because the emotion of anger is like I visualize the water faucet in your house. But the water can come out and it can be rather cool and it can become very, very hot. But it's still water. And I think anger can be rather cool anger and it can be very, very hot anger and it can be everything in between. So it isn't just one thing. It ranges maybe in temperature or maybe in intensity. So I think it's rather interesting to try and understand at least some of the words, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but some of the words that we use to express this degree of intensity. Now, on this end, I think mild irritation is at least one term that's often used. And down towards this end, but not at the very end, there's probably hate. Or hatred. Now, I'm interested in what you people use as words in between. What angry words can you think of you've heard or you use that fall in between here? I'll try and put them somewhere between.
Disgusted,
okay.
Enraged.
Enraged. That's It's a little hotter.
Fury.
Okay, fury. That's a hot one.
Violent.
Violent?
Irritated, that might be beyond hate.
Well, we've got mildly irritated, and we can have irritated, and we can have more irritated.
Yes, okay.
What else?
Disturbed.
Disturbed, mad. We'll put mad up here. Disturbed up here.
But frustrated.
Sure, that's a good one.
Upset.
Well, take issue with upset. I think upset is a non-communicating word. Sure, it tells you nothing. You know, I was upset when the Vikings lost the Super Bowl, and I was upset when my grandma died, and I was upset when I fell down and hurt myself.
That doesn't explain the rug torn in half or anything.
Right, upset doesn't tell you really much of anything other than you aren't comfortable. So it's kind of one to be avoided.
Pissed off.
For the sake of respect, I'll put PO'd. Ticked off. Okay, what else is there? Infuriated?
Sure.
Steamed.
Fine.
Hot.
Seething. Strikes me as interesting is when I push get to further, you know, you go from cool to hot, and I go cold is the first part of it. Beyond hot for me. When I'm angry at someone, they die. I become so cold that it's almost like I can't take the anger of that heat. There's a feeling of just cold anger that it's almost like being in hell.
Is it as cold inside as it looks outside?
Yeah.
It is. That's interesting. Okay.
Livid?
Livid.
Yeah.
Okay. What have we been taught is the epitome? What is the most angry?
Murderous.
What?
I said murderous.
Murderous. I think there's something worse than that.
Than killing.
I didn't hear this.
Hate.
Hate? Well, that's close, but it's...
Vengeance?
No, that's close. I think it's a biblical term. It's wrath. Wrathful? Talk about the wrath of God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah or whatever. Okay.
What's the difference between wrathful and violent?
Beats me.
Because I would have put violent on the other side of hot. I mean, on occasion.
I would tend to put violent into the category of what we do with the emotion as a way of describing our behavior. That I think we act violently as a result of being enraged. Okay, I want to go on from here. There's a couple other things I think are real interesting. Anger also is a little bit like food. It can be current food that or current emotion that's just been dealt up to you. Or it can be stuff that's a little bit old. It's been around for a couple hours. Or, once you sleep on it, what does it become?
A grudge.
A grudge or?
Poison.
Poisonous?
Yeah.
Sure. Becomes resentment. Now we're going to talk about resentment tomorrow. There's some real interesting biblical instructives to us. I think it says in Ephesians 4:26, do not let the sun go down on your anger. I think that's a really healthy instructive about what we're not supposed to do to remain emotionally or spiritually healthy. Don't ever go to bed and sleep on anything, because then you're getting into trouble. Well, that's too much.
What if the issue is so large that you can't let loose of
still angry about it. What do you do with the Ephesians?
Then you clearly violate what the Bible says and struggle with it.
First time I've ever done that.
I'm sure you look forward to the opportunity.
No, Rich, can I say something?
Sure.
When you think about that, though, if you're angry and you're, it's so large, it's usually a lot of repressed situations. And therefore, you have to go back and sort it out. Because if you can deal with things in the present, you sort of have a clean slate.
Yeah. Well, and ideally, I think emotionally you'll be healthiest if you deal with it in the present, work it out, resolve it, and go on. But sometimes that isn't always possible.
What about kids who have anger with their parents and their parents have the power over them? You don't have to answer that right now. I just think that would be a category. It is terribly destructive. We know that. Yeah. But
And I guess I feel my responsibility as a parent is to help my child learn to deal and work with that when it's served up, you know, when it's current, so that hopefully they don't ever have to go to bed with it. But we're getting into a little bit of tomorrow's topic. I'd like to back off of that. Come tomorrow and we'll give you all the chins. I guess over the years I've come up with some different theories or ideas, and they aren't uniquely mine. I've just kind of collected them, and I think there may be some others also, but what I want to do is throw them out at you as different ways of describing or trying to understand anger, and then let's talk about them. I don't think any one is necessarily right or better. They're just five different ways of looking at it. First one says that anger is a secondary emotion. Basically, that theory says that anger is what you see on the outside, but behind that, primary, is some emotion that falls into the category of hurt or pain. And that anger is the animalistic kind of response that we all have to that hurt and pain. Now, in therapy, that's a very good philosophy and perspective to take, because there's a lot of therapists who only work with a person's anger and never go beyond that to finding out where's the hurt, where's the pain, let's work with that. Isn't that the sore of the infection? You can put band-aids on band-aids on band-aids and never heal the infection. But you also need to deal with the primary feeling. I think it's an interesting kind of little story to talk about the fact that it's sort of an animalistic response. If we went up to a dog and gave this dog, say it's a big German Shepherd, gave him a swift kick in the ribs, what's his first sensation going to be? Pain of the physical contact, sure. Now that's a physical pain. Nevertheless, it's pain. What's his reaction? He's going to turn and bark or maybe bite. And that's just an instinctive kind of quick thing, a way of dealing with the primary issue, which is pain. And I think as human beings, we react similarly. Fall down and skin your knee, a lot of people get mad. It's physical pain. Something happens, you feel emotional hurt or pain, a lot of people react with anger. Somebody dies, anger, a very common response. But behind that is a sense of hurt and loss and grief. Okay, number two, I got these in some kind of order. Kind of building on that, there's a theory that says that anger is a defense mechanism. It's a way of being defensive and protecting yourself. And again, a good way to look at it or understand it is the dog who is kicked and turns and barks or bites is, in a way, defending himself or herself from being kicked again. A let's face it, no sane or sober person kicks an angry dog twice. What better way to stop the pain from happening than to blast away with some anger? And a lot of people use anger as a way of distancing themselves from somebody. If they are threatened, or if their relationship or whatever happens with that person, it feels a lot of hurt and pain, anger is a good way to back them off, get them away, thinking probably that it'll protect me from more hurt and pain. There's an awful lot of people I see who, in order to avoid painful kinds of emotions, are angry, kind of all the time. Some people are angry all the time because it keeps them from ever having to risk getting close and therefore ever having to risk feeling hurt. Okay. Number three. Anger is an adult temper tantrum. I phrase it that way because I think it's interesting to draw some parallel pictures between a little child who says, "Mommy, I want a cookie," and mommy says, "No, you can't have one," flails on the floor, is kicking and screaming and wailing away because the child isn't going to get what it wants. This theory says the only reason that people get angry is that they're not getting what they want. And so when you don't get what you want in life, and you believe you deserve to get what you want in life, you get mad. And of course, as adults, you're not supposed to throw yourself on the floor and kick and scream and whatever, but people pout. Adults come up with creative, more socially acceptable ways to throw themselves on the floor and kick and scream and whatever. But the theory essentially says the only reason you get mad is because you're not getting what you want. Now, I've asked a lot of groups if anybody comes up with an example of when you're mad and it's a situation other than you're not getting what you want, please tell me. The problem with that is it's a black and white thing. Either you're getting what you want or you're not getting what you want. And if you're getting what you want, you got to be ill to get angry about it. So, you know, those are really only the two choices. But it's an interesting way of looking at it, I think. And when you're angry, it's sometimes helpful to ask yourself, am I fussing and fuming and throwing a fit because I'm not getting what I want? And what am I doing expecting to get what I want? Maybe I'm setting myself up. Okay, number four says anger is the consequence of an irrational thought or belief. This is basically the theory of Albert Ellis, who is a psychologist and has generated rational emotive therapy, which is a whole approach to dealing with emotions and counseling and everything else. And what he says is that A, there's always an action that happens in life. B, we always have beliefs in our mind that we've formulated to interpret what things in life mean. And C, we always end up with emotional consequences or feelings as a result of the beliefs we choose or the interpretations we choose to make of the things that happen in life. And when people are angry, it's because they have beliefs that are irrational, that are crazy. And most of those are things that he calls shoulds and oughts. Most of those are situations where you're saying, you should have done this, you should have known better, I shouldn't have done that, this should have happened, that shouldn't have happened. And Ellis says, That's an irrational way to think about and interpret the situation. And you're going to end up with emotionally damaging anger as a result of thinking and interpreting something in a crazy, irrational way. And of course, tomorrow we'll talk about how you go back up, change some beliefs, change some feelings.
Did he suggest that that's true of all anger or some anger or jealous?
My understanding is he says it's all.
But a drunk driver hits my child, I'm going to be angry about that. That feels pretty rational.
Yeah.
You could be angry about it.
Well, let's see, Ellis would say, what are you telling yourself to think about that happening? What are you saying about that event? That he shouldn't have done it. Right? Okay, let me ask you something. I don't want to get off into this theory because we can spend 2 days on it. But when he already has done it, why shouldn't he have? It's like saying they shouldn't have rang the bell before this session. And then getting mad because they did. It's commenting about the past and saying that it shouldn't have been the way it actually was. And that's crazy. I think what Ellis would say is it would be more appropriate to say, I wish that he wouldn't have hit and killed my daughter. And I feel very sad and very hurt. It's a very, very unfortunate, painful experience. But to say he shouldn't have done it is crazy. He did do it.
That's crazy.
That, if I'm understanding that correctly, then that assumes that anger is inappropriate, or anger is neurotic. Is that correct?
I would think Ellis would say anger is self-destructive.
So,
anger is denying reality and saying that it should have been a different way, and in fact it wasn't, so you get emotionally mad because it wasn't different or the way you wanted it to be.
I thought his belief that it was B was your mental belief about what happened, and instead of reacting to A, which is the accident, you react emotionally and react to B instead of A.
Right.
Which doesn't make sense in the
hypothesis. Well, basically what Alice says is we interpret everything in life, and we either interpret it in a healthy way or an unhealthy way. And when we interpret it in irrational kinds of ways, we end up with unhealthy, emotional, self-destructive feelings. And anger is one of those self-destructive feelings.
Which, what does he say about grief? I mean, anger is a part of grief. And if you hit a kid, if your child's killed, they're going to be angry as a consequence of it. But you don't, I mean, I can see him saying that if you stayed there for the rest of your life. But if you move on to acceptance, then you're working through your feelings.
Right? I think Ellis would say grief is a combination of hurt and loss and pain that's incredibly intense. And that's tons of emotional work and agony to experience. Why get mad about it too? Why heap coals on top of the fire for you to have to struggle and destroy yourself over? Why not deal with the real issue of the intense hurt and pain and loss? I don't want to get off on Elbert Ellis and focus on it too much. It's a real interesting approach. I think the fifth theory is that anger is a manipulation ploy. It's a way to con and manipulate people. Some people react certain ways to when people are angry. Some people use anger to get what they want, to intimidate, to threaten, and to get their own way. And it may be to the point of threatening physical violence or whatever, but it's a way of manipulating other people. Okay. What do you want to talk about these five different theories? What do you want to talk about anger? Where do you want to go with it?
Could you explain the difference between the first two? To me, they seem most kind of the same.
Well, I think they're real close. I think the first one, primarily the emphasis is that you are missing the boat if you accept anger as the primary issue. That it's there, it's a feeling, it's an issue that needs to be dealt with, but it's not the whole story. And that more primary and significant beyond it is the hurt, painful kind of emotion, whatever kind it is, that's behind it. The second one is that the anger serves you a purpose. That there's a reason and a benefit or a payoff for the anger, and it can be a way to protect and defend you.
Almost becomes like an insurance policy. If I stay angry enough, then they'll never do that to me again.
And resentment is like installing a burglar alarm system that emotionally, as soon as you see that person, the hair stands up on the back of your neck. And you immediately are uptight, defensive, and ready for a fight. You know, maybe that's pushing it kind of extreme. But great way to protect and defend yourself if you don't ever want to get hurt again.
Those first two were demonstrated almost in a situation I had with our son when he was about 9. We had discussed that anger was a secondary feeling. And one day I thought I was alone in the house and we were standing on our front deck overlooking the street. And he came up behind me and I didn't hear it. And he came up and as this boy's thing was fun, went whoop in my ribs. And we caught this just tremendous fury dumped immediately on me. And he kind of just backed me away. And he said, "You're really, really mad." And I said, "More than that, I'm scared." I was terribly frightened. At the edge of the deck, and had somebody come up behind me, and I
was
there.
Sure.
And I never thought of it as a defense mechanism, but he never did it.
Yeah. In that sense, it defended you from more fear. It also manipulated him to change his mind about doing that kind of stuff in the future. Yeah.
But I guess I would like to explore as a really healthy thing to use. You ask where do we want to go from here, and I'm still struggling with some earlier teachings about it basically being a non-productive emotion, sort of along the lines of what Ellis is teaching. And I've thought about some of your examples, but they've been animal examples mostly so far.
Well, there's a human one.
It's a human example, but is it the way we would like to teach our children not to do things by scaring them with their anger?
I would guess in that instance, of course, she didn't stop to think how she's going to teach her son.
No, I know she didn't. But
I've heard of books where they teach you as a parent to you know even pretend that you're angry and make a bad face and get up close and mm-hmm. you know.
Is it with the child or with the dog?
With the
puppy.
With the child.
Impressive. With our son. I don't know if I would have chosen to react that way if I had a chance to think, but I frequently act without thinking. And what it taught him immediately, and when he learned it before, was he had to accept my reaction in response to his action. And so in a way, he was, you know, he was responsible for what came down on him. I don't think that was all bad.
Sure. And I think it's just simply going to happen. What is probably real valuable in what you did was that you admitted you were angry, but you then also talked about the other more primary emotion, and that is you were very frightened. And I think that's the most instructive thing we can do with children is to talk about the other emotions, the other feelings that we have that are behind this. Lots of parents just beller away at and yell and scream and, you know, bitch out their kids and leave it. and never get down to the more primary feeling and the other more intimate personal emotions or share them with their children. And so their kids come through our treatment programs, and all they know is about emotions is they feel okay or they're mad. What other feelings are there? None. Everything's okay, or are you mad?
I was kind of curious about the Ellis implication that anger is really a bad emotion. You know, when we started out saying emotions aren't good or bad, but they simply are.
Did I say bad, or did I say self-destructive?
Perhaps. I guess I interpreted that as, you know, synonymous with bad.
Good example of what Ellis says.
Okay. Well, I can think of a situation in which, looking back, I felt very badly hurt, and I sensed I was becoming very depressed and immobilized. I mean, physically immobilized, emotionally immobilized. It was really kind of bad to see myself going downhill, and I couldn't get out of it. And I think when I kind of became angry about the situation and about, you know, how I had let things happen that I shouldn't have absorbed, anger gave me some energy.
Yeah.
And I thought it was not at all self-destructive at that point. I felt I had some justifiable anger about some things that had been done to me that hadn't, you know, been righted. I hadn't corrected situations. So in other words, I found anger was very helpful. It was sure better than being depressed.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
You know, and I don't want to stay angry, but it was one step up from where I was going.
My guess is that Ellis would say, you were depressed because you already were angry and weren't getting it out and dealing with it. Once you started to admit to it, you started to loosen it up and started to let it come out, and you dealt with it. But the reason you got angry in the first place was based on an irrational interpretation of the situation.
The five things you listed there seem to divide fairly evenly. The first two really are sort of morally neutral terms, and the last three really do carry moral freight in a negative sense. The whole idea of tantrum, irrationality, and manipulation all connote, at least.
What?
Negative
morality.
Oh. I guess I'd never looked at them that way. I simply looked at a tantrum as a form of behavior, irrational belief as a way of interpreting life, and manipulation as can be negative, but it also can be very positive. I don't think moralizing right or wrong, good or bad, does anything but confuse the issue anyway.
I agree with that, but I also agree with you that there is some negative attachment, you know, rightly or wrongly. There's enough negativism attached to terms like irrational, manipulate, to give it.
To make it sound like something you don't want to do as a mature, rational adult. Well, whatever we do, let's not admit that we do things that aren't too irrational. Please?
Well, that's sort of what I was thinking, that where are we when the fear of showing anger, fear of admitting that we're angry, seems to me much worse than being angry. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me the fear hides the anger, and no one can then communicate clearly anymore, because I won't admit I'm angry, or I can't even recognize it in myself. Like, being depressed is one of those terrible situations, but it tends to isolate you. Well, if you're in communication, if it's husband and wife or children and parents, if I as a mother will not admit I'm angry because I'm too good a mother to be angry at my child, I'm just right. That's all. Yeah. I'm not angry. I'm right. You know, and we will not communicate them, in my opinion, probably, the way I look at things. That's not a good way to communicate.
But kind of like, I don't get angry, I just get even.
That's right. That's a good way. Or I'm too good to be angry, so your anger, say, in spouse situations, is ridiculous. I mean,
you are a ridiculous person for being angry because I won't be angry. And I am in control. I mean, all those things.
That's like a male thing to do, huh?
That, you know, I think my understanding of that is that your emotion of anger that you honestly have is probably intense enough to leave you feeling very threatened and very vulnerable. And to expose your vulnerability is much too threatening to be that open and honest at that point, so you deny it and refuse to be that transparent because you're too frightened of that. You've got to stuff it, deny that you don't feel it, and come off with this other kinds of stuff. Till maybe later, when you process it all, you cool down, you get yourself back into control, and then can deal with it methodically and stay in control and never be at risk.
The vulnerability that goes with anger.
Well, clearly.
Yeah.
Intense anger leaves people many times very vulnerable and out of control. You know, and we live in a society where being in control is mature.
Well, it's sort of like the other side of the defensive. Anger defends you from, it also can.
Well, being in control is defensive.
Yeah, I that's what I'm saying. But anger can lead to. It sounds to me like anger is not. It's qualified at any given time. It can be a barrier, or it can be a bridge to communication. So
depends on what you do with it.
Right. Well, that's. I mean, it just helps me in looking at definitions to say, yes, that is true. And now how do I express my anger or understand it in a way that will open rather than close?
See, I think when you're feeling that vulnerability of being so angry that you might be out of control, it's maybe more honest to admit that. I'm getting so mad, I'm starting to get out of control. I'm getting scared of getting out of control, but I'm getting mad. You know, to admit to
someone. That can also carry a threat. If, for instance, the person is someone powerful, a parent or a man versus a woman, that statement is also manipulation in a sense.
That's how you take it. I have other theories about manipulation, and primarily our society says it's something someone does to somebody else. I don't buy that. I think it takes two to tango. And everybody is a party in a joint effort of manipulation. Mm-hmm. Unless you're in the select situation where somebody actually physically ties you up and throws you off the cliff and you have absolutely no control. All other situations where a salesman comes to the door and sells you $1,000 worth of encyclopedias, you didn't get conned. You bought them. You didn't get manipulated. You joined in the effort and believed the sales pitch and made the decision to go along with it.
Okay, well then what response do you have? For instance, in that example you gave, you recognize your anger is too big for the situation, out of control. What's the other person in that situation? Put it in parent-child just for practical purposes. You see the size difference, the power difference immediately. What does the child do? What's appropriate?
What does the child do?
Here's a parent saying, I'm out of control. The child say, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done this, I'm sorry. I was trying to carry this the thing into what I understand as the working out of anger as it affects our lives. And that's what I...
That's kind of what we want to deal with tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
Is what to do with it.
Yeah.
How to work it out.
Is there a way of approaching this, what anger is, sort of through the back door by saying, okay, if a person can't show, if I have a problem showing anger, why is that? And what do I feel when I can't show it? And do I learn anything more about what anger is by looking at it that way?
First of all, I might suggest it isn't that you can't show, it's that you won't. Can't connotes you have no control or choice, and I think you have choice and control. So it's that you won't show your anger if for some reason you've chosen not to.
Yeah. And if you take it that one is the fear of destruction. Okay, being the reason, at least for me, and the other is very opposite, is a sense of shame. I am wrong. Deep down inside, I think it's my fault. And
fear of humiliation?
Well, it makes situations that normally you might get angry at, I'll just accept. And yet, there's a churning that keeps going on there. It isn't, there's no pressure built or whatever, but there is something I'm saying, yes, you know, I suppose I'm wrong. Then there are points when that can build up to where I fear the destructiveness of anger to the point that that can freeze me and keep me from doing anything.
Yeah, again, I think those are ways of dealing with it. They're healthy or unhealthy. And can we put them off till tomorrow?
Oh, okay.
One question back here, please. No. Is it still current?
I was thinking earlier when you were giving the example that in a situation where you feel like you're about to go out of control, you could actually say, I'm so angry, I feel like I'm going to go out of control. But what I heard was maybe the fear that that would actually escalate the situation, and I think that that actually diffuses it. To acknowledge how you're feeling is the one way of expressing it rather than acting it out. So.
To make that very existential exclamation that this is where I'm at right now. Puts your cards right out on the table. And I think then everybody knows where things are at. Everybody knows what's going on. And I don't think it does escalate from that point. But it takes an awful lot of guts or risk to admit to that, especially when it's an emotional turmoil that doesn't fit what you think an adult or a mother or a parent is supposed to look like. The trouble is, it is the way adults and parents feel. And the question is, what are you model to your children? Honest human adulthood or a certain image that you think they're supposed to see?
Well, don't we as a church, or haven't we? We started this out by saying we aren't going to say that it isn't Christian to be angry, but haven't we done that historically? I mean, we look at Jesus in the temple as sort of an embarrassment, but that one might be okay because that was righteous. But my anger isn't very righteous. I think we're still perpetuating it.
But that's just a theological way of justifying being Swedish or Norwegian.
But well, we Germans, it's okay to be angry.
Being angry makes you lose your self-control. And in some instances where you need to maintain your self-control, it's destructive. And there are some people who like to manipulate a person into that anger, so that they are in turn in control of you by pushing your buttons and knowing that they're going to cause the anger so that you are no longer in control. A child will do that to a parent or to a teacher or some power figure. Or it could be someone who's working with someone else and they're going to be one up on you by putting you into that position of being out of control because it's very unproductive in that regard.
But what's interesting is Albert Ellis again would say, you choose how to feel, that other person doesn't make you feel that.
So it's very important to be aware of what is happening and to keep that control, but it is difficult sometimes afterwards. You can get angry with yourself for having been manipulated into that anger. It gets kind of into it.
Yeah.
Something that strikes, somebody else?
Yes, ma'am.
Something that strikes me a lot lately, the last few years, is how anger might be different for males and females. And, like, how tall are you?
6'1".
How tall is Maggie?
5'3".
Okay, so that's what? 10 inches? 9 inches?
9 inches, I guess.
How much do you weigh?
About 75 pounds more than her.
Okay. And how much is that?
180.
Now, what if you lived with someone who's 6'11 and weighed, what are you, 85? 265 pounds. You live with this person 24 hours a day. Given the way males think they should react, what would that do to us? I think that if my brother was 6'4 and 247 pounds, 5'11 and 106, there's something very different the way I'm going to deal with anger than maybe say my brother. Something very different than my wife experienced. I think of myself as a little person compared to her. Still, it's like living with someone even bigger than my brother. And that since the manifestation of anger can involve that destructiveness, you can't forget that, no matter how much you love someone. You really can't forget that if this person went off the handle, you know, it's a broken neck real fast, I mean, that kind of thing. What does that do to manipulation and defense mechanism? See how it all mixes in there, all that stuff?
Well, the problem I have with that, Jim, is that you're kind of making the assumption that all anger is going to become physical violence.
No, I'm not assuming that at all. But that's a potential. Anyone who's lived with me long enough to know what I say and do if, say, my hand comes off the wrench and bangs my knuckles, you know, is going to know that violence is something that is possible. Anybody who's seen me get mad and kick something through a wall, you know, knows that that's potential, and that's a potential for anyone. And I'm just saying, what's that like from a creature, a fellow creature, who is outside that weight class?
And then take that family example and multiply it by all the things that women know in society has been victimized. If you yourself have been, you know someone else who has been, and all through history. So it's more than just one couple and their size difference or strength difference, but it's much broader than that. I was going to ask if today or tomorrow was the time to talk about the two problems that I have. When I am angry and I recognize that I'm angry, but I'm in public, appropriate ways to deal with it. And when someone else is angry at me, how do I deal with it?
Maybe I ought to ask everyone else, do you want to move off into that direction, or are there more things you want to talk about here today?
Let me raise one other before we make that shift.
Okay.
It probably would take 3 or 4 hours to do it. I found myself thinking about some of the political scene and some of the the nationalistic muscle flexing that feels to me like an anger product, you know, the Libya bombing, and if we're talking about size differences between a big man and a smaller woman, this big country and this small country, and a lot of it seems to tie into some of these five.
Sure. Clearly, it's you're not getting it the way you want it. Bombing Libya was not what I wanted us to do. I was also very embarrassed and ashamed of the fact that we chose a violent means to cope with it.
And I guess I'm saying all that. I felt that anger, but I think as a nation there was some anger that the administration chose to let out by bombing. I mean, we were afraid because of the terrorists, and so rather than deal with that fear, we're going to do an angry thing.
We can get off into that. I think there's a lot of other things that that event represented. You know, it was also a show of force. It was a show of control, an attempt to use violence and force to control something that we were looking like absolute fools because we had no control over. It was also an intimidation kind of effort, obviously. I guess I was really surprised at the amount of support that that effort received. As a matter of fact, I was grossly disappointed that our nation was that supportive of that effort. And I got into some very interesting discussions with people who were 100% behind it.
We had to do something. That's what I kept hearing.
Sure. And what was there to do? We've got to nail them on the head and play macho man and clobber them hard. Well, that's just, that isn't going to solve the situation. That'll be back.
Did you also get that?
So my question is, what was irrational about the way that you felt? See, because that's the way I felt, and I don't think that's irrational.
I was just real disappointed and embarrassed.
That we had,
I didn't feel any anger about it myself.
What about
it just it confirmed a lot of beliefs I already had about who's in control of the country, but that's
But Rich, what about anger for other people's situations? What's wrong with using that term? Or maybe it's not, maybe you can use it and it is the kind of feeling that ought to be there. Like when you hear the kind of torture that is going on, or I was thinking of how South Africa comes to mind, is that we can't even find out what's going on. Why the vital importance of not using anger as a description for those feelings? To me, that I thought we were talking about where we did feel anger, and this guy doesn't even fit in that to me, because he sort of seems like he's eliminating anger as a quote healthy or normal response. What we do with it can become something else, but that we feel it. It sounds like he doesn't think anger is an appropriate feeling. Else, yeah. I mean, anger on behalf of some situation that is not in my power to control, I suppose, would be a temper tantrum. I mean, I wouldn't describe it that way. It doesn't fit. It's a sense of what's right and what's fair, what's just at a very basic level.
Mm-hmm.
People should not have their toes and fingers removed for being related to somebody.
Let me play the devil's advocate here.
Yeah.
Why shouldn't they?
Because that's against a humane communication.
I agree. Why shouldn't people be inhumane if they choose to be?
If they choose to be, if they're humans, they should not be inhumane.
Why shouldn't they be?
Because that's not
the way you want the world to run?
We're all going to laugh. If self-destruction is a good...
Who cares if we self-destruct?
So this is... Devil's advocate, out of Alice.
Doesn't someone have the freedom to choose to self-destruct the human race if they'd like to?
No.
They don't?
They should.
They do.
No, they don't, because I'm here.
They do it constantly.
I'm here and somebody else is also here who's going to say, no, I'm sorry, you think you have the freedom to self-destruct? You do not have that. I will put you somewhere where you cannot use that freedom.
But the difficulty is, we can't catch them.
Well, I'm not saying it's not. That's what I think is terrible about the present situations we know about, where we have no power and we are angry and we are desirous of some control to move it back in a direction that we consider what I think you mean.
My hunch is that a lot of our anger about the terrorist situation is both that they are not choosing to live their lives the way we believe humanity should live their lives.
But I'm not talking about terrorism. I'm talking about apartheid, say, or
okay.
I think there's a difference because I don't want to get into this. You know, we're out of control. I realize that. But just that we have to know these things. We have to know in our world. We get enough knowledge to respond to what other people are going through. To me, it is a sign, a symptom of health that someone responds with anger, rather than that someone can put it at a less demanding and energizing emotion and say, this is very disappointing that they're doing that. My, but I'm sorry to hear that they're pulling their fingers off little children. That doesn't sound very nice. That bothers me. You know, I mean, I think, you know what I'm saying. I think it is, that may be a completely other discussion on the subject, but I don't see it fitting in these descriptions, or I can't place it, maybe you can. What that kind of anger, which is not self-protective, except in my self-respect as a human being. I know this is going on, I'm not doing anything. What kind of human being am I?
That something goes against my moral code. When someone is doing something that I consider immoral, like your example from South Africa, if I am angry and go fix a salad for supper, you know, then my anger does no good. If my anger motivates me to do something to help, then it's helpful.
Let me toss in another thing, that using a couple of these. Is your anger in a situation like that a secondary feeling? Is there a more primary emotion that says, if they can do that to them, they can do that to me? Whatever happens to other humanity also affects me. And do you feel hurt and pain? Do you feel grief and loss? Is that intense enough for you to react and to want to defend and protect because you're threatened too?
But you're talking now in terms of community, not only person, which is an extension of the expression of anger that might require something different from what I would do if some big person who was a meanie tried to pull my finger off. Sure. I would be in a different response system.
Well, certainly.
That's what I'm trying to distinguish, maybe just for myself, how they, since I hear this one side that I have trouble dealing with, this Ellis description, which sounds like it is eliminating something, anger, as a legitimate
emotion.
A legitimate appropriate emotion.
Yeah, and I guess that's my problem too, is that just when I'm kind of coming to a point in my life where people are finally convincing me that maybe it's okay to be angry, sounds like Ellis, by attaching things like irrational to it, saying that it's not an appropriate emotion. And if we're going to talk about tomorrow about how to deal appropriately with it, it seems to me that, first of all, we have to be able to say that anger can be appropriate response to situation, whether or not it's secondary or primary. It's still, you know, I think when it's against a basic moral fiber, then it's appropriate.
I have a little concern that we're getting into making moral judgments about it's okay or not okay.
Well, I'm concerned about that too, because I guess I wanted to seek some clarification from you. It seemed like you were saying, or maybe defending Ellis's saying, that it's not okay. And that's a moral judgment.
What I hear Ellis saying is that it's irrational and unhealthy. You can be as angry as you want to be. He doesn't care. You can destroy yourself with your anger. He doesn't care. But his theory says it's crazy. And it's self-destructive. But you can choose it if you'd like.
Isn't that moral
judgment? I think he's saying you have the right and the freedom to choose. You can choose what's good for you and healthy, or you can choose what's unhealthy and destructive. Go ahead, do what you want. Before you leave, I have one interesting little poem I wanted to read to you. And I've got some copies if you want a copy. And I thought it was real interesting. It says, of the seven deadly sins, anger is probably the most fun. To lick your wounds, to smack your lips over grievances long past, to roll over your tongue the prospect of bitter confrontation to come, to savor the last toothsome morsel of both the pain you are giving and the pain you are getting back. In many ways, it's a feast fit for a king. The chief drawback is that what you are wolfing down is yourself. The skeleton at the feast is you.